All right, this show brought to you in part by SimpliSafe. If you have 30 minutes, you never have to worry about break-ins ever again. Just go to simplisafe.com/Adam, get all the sensors you need, all the help you need as well to set it up. Custom systems going to show up post-haste at simplisafe.com/Adam. Well, in this show, Michael Yo is back in studio, and Thomas Jane, the ubiquitous actor, is in here with lots of thoughts that you never knew he had. First, there's Geico. Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
This is about something that lights your fire when nothing else will.
This is the Mark Divine Show. This show, we're going to discover and dive in and discuss what makes the world's most inspirational, compassionate, and resilient leaders so courageous.
Transform the nature and functioning of our own brain for the better.
Go put your virtues in action. Be the best version of yourself.
Life is a practice. Day by day, get wiser and stronger and grow.
How do you understand enough about your own mind and psychology and emotions, and how do you develop a reflective awareness practice to actually get in the driver's seat of your own mind?
We go in-depth with people from all walks of life. Martial arts grandmasters, meditative monks, CEOs, military leaders, stoic philosophers, proud survivors, and more. Every episode turns our guest experience into actionable insights that you can learn from and lead a life filled with compassion and courage.
I started putting all these little tools in my pocket, started to reflect a lot and meditate.
There has to be a balance between movement and rest.
It all starts with us. We cultivate these qualities in ourselves to become a beacon of light for others in the world. Please join us on the journey. The Mark Divine Show. Hoo-yah.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Today, Adam is joined by Michael Yo and Thomas Jane. And now, a man who cares less about human trafficking than just traffic. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice. We've got a mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. A little different format today. Our friend Michael Yo is joining us in studio, and Thomas Jane as well. Oh, he's an author. He's an actor. He's a writer. He's a raconteur. I probably met him at when I first saw Boogie Nights, one of my favorite movies of all time, and thought he was subtly always stole the scenes he was in. So good to see you, Thomas.
You're right. You got to do it subtly enough so that the other actors don't get pissed.
I do. Just you with that porn mustache, beaked up on cocaine.
I love that porn mustache. And the
cocaine, you could tell like what was coursing through your brain. And
Is my homework.
That Alfred Molina part with the firecrackers, it's just one of the best scenes in cinematic history.
That was a buddy of Paul Thomas Anderson's who literally was doing that, throwing firecrackers at a party. Like the week before, it wasn't in the script, and so Paul's like, "Hey, could you? I'm shooting a scene. Could you?" And so he brought his pal in just to do that.
Really?
For 3 days. Problem is, after a while, all the actors got used to it, so nobody was reacting anymore. So they were firing off guns and banging shit together.
It just added so much crazy tension to an already tension-filled scene. I know you got a movie that's out in theaters and VOD coming out September 23rd. That is Dig. I just watched a trailer. Emil Hirsch is in this. It looks very interesting.
Yeah, it's cool. We did a good little – we love those little character guys with thriller, you know, but it was really four really strong actors who got to play together, Emil and his girlfriend kidnap me and my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Played by my daughter.
Oh, really?
Harlow, yeah.
Oh, I did not know that.
I didn't know she could act either. She auditioned for it. She's like, I want to audition for this thing. She knocked everybody out. And she'd been working on it for a while, so went to school, and but, you know, they say it skips a generation. Well, it didn't with her. She's better. She's better. Hell of a lot better than I was when I was 19.
Well, you were in India making movies when you were 19.
16.
Well, or I didn't know if you stayed till 19 or not.
Yeah, I wanted to. They asked me to stay. They were like, "We want you to be the white man in Bollywood."
And Thomas's story is crazy. He left high school and went to India at 16 and started acting.
Which I certainly did.
Did they discover you out there, or you just randomly?
I dropped out of school. I was like, I know what I want to do. I want to be an actor. I'd been and done some theater in high school, and my mom and dad were like, "Are you out of your fucking mind?" Didn't know what to do with me. My neighbor across the fence told my mom. She's like, "I work next to this acting class down in Bethesda, Maryland. It's called the Maryland Academy of Dramatic Arts." And so my mom told me, and I started taking the train down there every day. I was the youngest kid in the class, supposed to be in school. I was at the Maryland Academy. I met a great guy, the teacher named Ralph Tabakin. And Tabakin's in all of Barry Levinson's movies back in the day.
In Diner?
The young Sherlock Holmes. In Diner, he plays the TV salesman.
Yeah.
In the scene, in brilliant little scene.
Diner's a great movie that it flies under the radar a little bit.
Because that was his first, that was Levinson's kind of, it's brilliant.
Like Mickey Rourke, so many names.
So many great actors who weren't, you know, who Levinson had found, basically.
Daniel Stern, but just tons of guys. Funny, kind of intimate, kind of interesting, kind of a period piece. I don't think people, it doesn't get in rotation on the cable.
It's one of those kind of
forgotten
films. Yeah, any film buffs.
Oh, Kevin Bacon.
That's what I was thinking of, right?
Young Kevin Bacon in that.
Everybody's so young, and it's a brilliant little movie, you know? Kind of reminds you a little bit of a sort of a updated version of American Graffiti in a way, you know, a gang of young guys.
A lot of very Americana. Takes Americana. A lot of time in diners. And
all shot in Baltimore, where I was born.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's why Levinson shot all his movies around there, and Ralph was a local. So he was always pulling Ralph, who was his good luck charm, Levinson said.
That's your acting coach.
Yeah. Ralph. Yes. Ralph Tabakin. He's got these great bushy eyebrows, these big glasses. He seems one of those guys that's been 75 for all of his life. Brilliant guy. Talk like that, kind of blinked a little bit like that.
But so, like, philosophically, I don't know. At this point, what I've learned about life is if you have a kid who's very interested in something outside of school, that's called a blessing, and it should be explored.
You got it. Yes.
When I was growing up, if you were interested in something outside of school, the whole plan was knock it off and get back to school.
Right. They drunk the Kool-Aid, you know,
right.
Because school was literally invented to create factory workers. That's what it was invented for. And that's what Rockefeller said. There's a letter that he wrote to the president saying, "We need workers. We're opening these factories." And they started the American public school system, which is literally designed to make you do repetitive tasks, to make you listen to your boss, shut up, get punished, and get good grades so you can get that gold star on your paper.
Yeah, and if you I heard an economist speak about it recently. And I don't think anymore that it's just a mistake that they don't teach any kind of financial literacy in schools at all.
God.
It's a lot of baking classes and a lot of repetitive same classes. There's no financial, like, are they not interested in these people being literate financially?
No,
and
absolutely.
They don't seem like they are.
No.
Who said it? There's a great quote. I wish he said, if people really understood how the financial system works, there would be a rebellion tomorrow.
Right.
Somebody can Google that. Somebody wonderful said that. And it's true. It's absolutely
Thomas
true.
Thomas Sowell, maybe?
Thomas Sowell.
We're going with Thomas Sowell?
No. Somebody like, you know, Ben Franklin or I forget.
Yes. So it seems weird that within the system, like, the number one thing you need to learn is how to handle your finances. You just, when it comes to being adult, you know what I mean? Like when they go like, how are you going to get from here, from high school to transitioning into being adult?
How are you going to balance your checkbook?
Right. Now, knowing geography is fine, but you don't need it to get to the next place. And knowing history, and then there's all the fakakta, like I would take ceramics classes and practical classes like baking and cooking and sewing and stuff.
Shop. I love
shop.
That.
I love Built it too. But you really, to get from living with your parents to living on your own, you need to be financially
literate. Especially today, they want you to be, it's becoming a nanny state. They want you dependent more than ever on the state to take care of you. So the less you know, the more easy you are to control.
And also they want you to start in debt.
Right.
That's the key is how many times, like when I was young, you would go to college, they would throw a credit card at you. You don't know anything about a credit card. You would get it like, and then max it out in like
$500.
And max it out in like a month because they want you to start in debt and not know anything about finance.
So. The quote might be Henry Ford, so my screen says.
You know, I was going to say Ford because I was looking at your racing stuff out there. You've got some great pictures of racing. And it reminded me when in 2001, I almost bought a Ford GT40.
In 2001,
yeah. And now I was looking at
old GT40.
They were remaking them, and they just come out. I think it's
2006.
Oh, 05. Okay. Well, it was
160
grand. I almost bought it, and now it's worth double.
No, it could be $450, depending on how you painted it.
Instead of buying that, I literally was talking to the guy, but then my. I had a kid and had to buy a wife a house. I had to buy a wife.
Depending on where you live.
Is it Ford GT or the wife?
Yeah, so this thing, and I think we're all sort of on the same page here, which is it got me thinking. We were talking off the air about aliens, and Thomas is doing a book on aliens, and I want to discuss that subject.
Tell everybody.
But I gotta say that I used to be very skeptical about almost anything that would be considered a conspiracy theory.
As we should be.
And I was always, you know, I was a kid, it was the Devil's Triangle and the Loch Ness Monster, and it was a lot of that.
I loved all that stuff.
I loved it too, but I never really fully bought into it.
I grew up loving Dracula.
Yeah.
Bigfoot.
Yeah,
and UFOs, and then as you get a little older, I forgot all about that stuff because you know you figure okay, well,
Bigfoot's funny because we called him Bigfoot for the first 20 years, and then people like I don't think people are buying this shit. We'll call him Sasquatch, and then you'll go
Sasquatch.
What? That's what the Native Americans. Oh, they had a name for him. Yeah, well then he must be real. We're just calling him Bigfoot.
I like Yeti.
Yeti's strong, too.
Yeah. Yeti's strong. Yeah.
So I never really was, like, down with that stuff. But the older I get and the more I look at the government, I'm like, what are you guys doing? Like, what is this thing where you're trying to get everybody on the dole? Like, everyone, we're going to pay for college. We're going to start the food programs. You know, when they started doing this thing where it's like, well, we'll provide breakfast and lunch for the student, but what about dinner? Or what about Sundays? It's like, you're just going to provide. Yeah, Chris can find the Young Turks yelling at me because I went on a rant about 10 years ago, which basically said, I don't want young kids being indoctrinated into the free lunch program, not because I'm against feeding kids.
Right.
I'm against the government feeding you at age 8. Because that's really, it starts with the free breakfast and the free lunch, which is,
instead
and the
of
parents sitting around
education.
Going like, who's going to feed my kids? Like, you're going to feed your kids. Mm-hmm. That's how this is going to work.
That's the idea, yeah. But it's instead of educating people, you know. But I think what's wonderful, and I think why we're seeing a real pushback against the internet now with our misinformation, our disinformation, our malinformation, all of that is a controlled program to push us away from, because people are more educated now because of the internet. I have learned so much about the financial system, about the real history of the United States on the damn internet than I ever learned in school. everyone has access to this information now.
But everybody also has information to misinformation.
Absolutely.
On the internet too.
So the best thing that anyone can ever teach you in school, whether it's college or high school or elementary school, the first and only thing that you really need to know is how to be discerning, how to parse information, the logical fallacies. Is this a straw man argument? You know, what is the argument? How to break it down? Am I attacking the person? Am I attacking the system? Or am I attacking the logic of the argument? And just being able to, where are the references? Who should I trust? You know, right mm-hmm. now there's a huge appeal to authority going on. You know, if the big guy says, but that authority is now being challenged in ways that it never has before, hence the pushback. So that's why we see this, why the government just tried to open up the Ministry of Misinformation lately and then had to kind of pull back on that.
Yeah, that scares me. There's all sorts. It's not just our government. You can see these clips out of Australia. Listen, unless you hear your COVID information from us, don't believe it. It's batting average is for shit, lady.
And they're all taking orders, as far as I can tell. And I haven't really figured this out yet, but this WEF situation seems, this Great Reset situation, there seems to be something where somebody's handing it, because Australia, Canada, America, all of the West, all of the UK,
Germany,
they're all following the same orders. They're all following the same thing now. And nobody has an opinion. And if they don't like what the leaders are saying, eventually they won't, because it's all bullshit. They replace them and stick in some other guy who says the exact same thing. It doesn't seem to be leaders anymore.
Yeah, when I was and then you have to factor in Trump, which is Trump seems very scary to that process.
Trump is the pushback. He's sort of he's standing on the opposite side. I mean, that they want to take that guy down real bad.
Yeah. And,
yes, they're very
crazed, intent on that, and that's for a damn good reason. I mean, they're putting all the marbles on this thing that's going on right now.
Well, I know. See, there's the everyone hates Trump. That's one side of it. There's like all women I know hate Trump, right? But then there's a more government-based, energized, we need to take him down, which I'm starting to pick up the vibes on, which is that's not you thinking he's a douche. That's you thinking he's dangerous. But
that's what I'm picking up on,
not dangerous to
too.
The woman who thinks he's a douche, dangerous to the status quo.
To the new system that they are slowly creeping into place, inexorably, like a slow motion tsunami around the world.
I agree. I'm not paranoid. I'm not Alex Jones, but especially COVID kind of supersized it, kind of sped it up. Like I'll give you an example. It's dumb, but I think it'll work in this in this case. I just got off a first class flight. I fly all over the fucking place. Sometimes I fly Southwest. Sometimes I'm in business, whatever it is. I cannot get a piece of lemon or lime on an airplane anymore. I order every time. They come sitting in first class. Yeah. They go, would you like a cocktail? I go, yes, I would.
Right.
They go, vodka, soda, and lemon. They go, we don't do the lemon.
Interesting.
I go, do you have the lime? They go, no, we're not doing that. I go, why not? They go, COVID. Now, there's nothing COVID has to do with citrus. There's nothing. But they wanted to get rid of this thing, and they used COVID as a reason.
Good cleaning house.
So the government would like to know where you live, where you are, when you're doing it, where you're traveling, and many, many things. They want a lot of stuff from you, so they use COVID to go, oh, here's a little opportunity for us to lay out. Like California, we're still living under emergency orders.
Yeah.
Why are we still under emergency orders?
The country,
because fucking Gavin Newsom likes it, because he gets to be in control. That's why. If he didn't like it, he would have lifted it.
We're under emergency orders since 2001, and that's a fact. Those emergency, and that's where I really first learned about.
I mean, like 9/11.
9/11 happened, which, by the way, was yesterday, right? The anniversary.
Yeah.
9/11 happened, and they moved in the emergency stuff. They were essentially able to do things to our Constitution
Patriot
that
Act.
They'd never been able to do before, and
right.
that never goes away. Once that stuff gets put in place. They don't go, okay, emergency's over, now we're going back to normal.
Right.
It sticks.
Never happens.
No, we don't. It's the sign that says what's not allowed on the beach. They never remove one. They just keep adding one. It started
right.
with no bonfires, and then it went to no dogs, and then it went to no beer,
no
and then it went to no fireworks, and then
no
it
swimming.
Went to no, now it's literally no throwing frisbees. I mean, the government adds to the sign. They never pull one. Mm-hmm. They never cap it or pull one off.
Unfortunately, it's dangerous to go swimming now. You know, the Dutch just put out a study that said all rainwater is essentially poisonous to humans and everything else.
Really?
There's something called forever chemicals that they test in the water, and they did its testing, and then basically the rainwater, which means that it's saturated into our water table, into the food we eat, and everything. And I forget the name for it, like PFDS something chemicals that essentially are chemicals that never degrade. They're actually stuck with us. They called them in the paper forever chemicals. They're now in the rain, so don't drink the rainwater, kids.
Yeah, I think the move of you going outside and opening your mouth and leaning back, I feel that's a bygone era.
Right.
Even if my kid was poisoned, I would still applaud that because it meant he put down his video game, stopped staring at the TV set, and
he's
actually left the house.
Drink out of water hoses back in the day. You remember that? Those dirty-ass water hoses.
Right. The water was the rain was the hose. The first 40 feet of that water tasted like the hose.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Warm.
Warm, yeah.
Warm and whatever the vinyl skirt was on that thing.
It's like the inside of a tire.
It took a while for the normal water to come.
Yeah, the first 40 was that. Then there was the drinking fountain at school that some asswipe shoved his gum into and would spray out all cattywampus. Then there was a – do you guys remember this? Well, you didn't go to school – Thomas, but every gymnasium I ever went to in the valley, in the gym, the basketball gym, had some weird head shower thing where you could kind of put your whole head into it and turn a knob. Chris, you got
to
find that
school
shit now. Oh, it was every 30s.
Is that a California thing?
It must have been a California thing.
It was like every gymnasium's 30s head. Something.
Type in gymnasium head and see what you get.
Go under video and see what pops up. All right, let me hit Simply Safe here. Nothing matters more than safety and the safety of your loved ones. But old school home security companies use outdated technologies, overcharge you, and lock you into multi-year contracts. That's why I use Simply Safe. Simply Safe, 24/7 professional monitoring. Simply Safe's agents dispatch police or first responders the moment a threat is detected, even if you're not home or you can't be reached, and you can customize the perfect system for your home in just a few minutes online. Just go to simplysafe.com/Adam. Save 20% when you sign up for interactive monitoring. Get that plan. Get your first month for free. Visit simplysafe.com/Adam. Learn more. It's two I's, S-I-M-P-L-I, safe. simplysafe.com/Adam and save that 20%. Yes.
I just bought my daughter a pepper spray gun. Keeps it in her purse. It shoots these balls, and then they
explode
on contact with pepper spray.
Mm.
Because I've just been looking around like, wow, like – I don't know, but people are angry. They're poor.
Yeah.
And it seems like a much more unsafe place than it should be.
She eventually is going to use that on you.
That's why
you're going to end up like Hasselhoff.
That's why I didn't get her a gun.
Right. Yeah. You know, there's this kind of perfect storm, which is it's like some of it is like diet based. Everyone's got seed oil and everything. Everyone's just sucking up a ton of seed oil and just bad. Everyone's getting kind of fat and fucked up sort of chemically, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then it's mixed, and then it's a sort of environmental sort of diet mixed with a sort of constant agitation.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like people telling you why you're being disrespected or why you're not welcome or how you're agitation. Not wanted. You know what I mean? It's like a constant beating of a drum of you're not wanted in this society. Right. And then people are fucking agitated. And they're just going outside and they're just like punching people. Like because this crazy like high and God knows pharmaceuticals and whatever else.
Less oxygen.
Is there less oxygen?
Yeah, oxygen's slowly getting sucked out. Carbon dioxide's going up. People are getting stupider. They say that staring at your phone raises your chances of dementia. Yeah, so that's all fun stuff.
It's all set up to fail. We're set up to fail.
Something
now.
Like in 30 years, I think 50% of the population's going to be on the autism spectrum.
Oh, really?
Somewhere, yeah.
I already have Asperger's, or so I'm told.
Well, it's working for you.
Listen. But it's been said you have Asperger's, and I would say to the person, open your mouth, and they go, why? And I go, so I can spit in it. And they go, why? So maybe you can get a little of this. This looks like you need a little whatever I'm selling.
Beats the hell out of rainwater.
Yeah. So speaking of conspiracy theories, and we'll circle back to that. You were getting your hair cut in here earlier.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, why is he getting his hair cut here? And somebody said, getting ready for the Emmys.
Yeah, you wanted some money for that, didn't you?
I just want to wet my beak. I don't. Well, salon owners get paid for the chair. They don't get paid by the head. But it was my chair. So you understand, otherwise all the celebrities are going to come in here and demand a haircut.
Oh, I'm coming in next week.
Every week.
Just to get a hot chair. The lady here is great, yeah.
So... what's coming up with the Emmys?
Emmys were Sunday night.
That's what I heard.
Sunday night, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Wait, did we pass the Emmys?
Mm-hmm. They're over.
Oh, I fucked them up?
Oh, man. I thought.
What? Emmys were last night, weren't they? The 12th?
Were they?
I think
no. Yeah. Coming up? Did we miss them?
No, Emmys
were... Oh, it was. It was. Sorry,
it was last night. Yeah, that's
what
shit.
I was watching football. Good show prep, Chris. Did you go to the Emmys?
I didn't even know they happened.
Oh. I got, what were you talking about, misinformation or fake news?
I thought they were tonight. I thought that my makeup girl was saying
they're tonight.
Somebody.
Sorry.
Oh, they're tonight.
They're tonight, yeah, the 12th.
Oh, okay.
The 12th, yeah.
All right. You didn't miss anything.
You must have been nominated a few dozen times, right?
I have been to a few of those shows, yeah, yes.
And... what do you think?
You know, I'm of the mind, I think it was, like Brando, he wouldn't go to the Oscars when he was nominated. I think, was it Sean Penn? He was like, you know, it's not a competition. I mean, I think it's great to be recognized. Like everything else, you're dealing with so much money being thrown at particular things that it just feels like another feeding tube, really. It's good for people to get turned on to good stuff, but we don't need them anymore. I mean, the internet is now so good at parsing out what kind of stuff you're interested in. I mean, good Lord, but you look at the amount of shows out there. I mean, it's staggering, the channels and then the shows, and there's actually good stuff. You know, I got a show on Amazon that they put out on, I guess the IMDb channel changed their name to Freevee or something. And I was on, and our show that we shot in Australia is on there called Trapo. It's doing great. I mean, people are finding it. And I'm surprised. I'm just like, how does anybody find anything these days?
Yes, it seems like here's an
analogy.
There's
good stuff out there and it's buried, you know.
No, I agree. I grew up going to Stevenson Hardware Store with my grandfather in North Hollywood. And it was just like a little ma and pa hardware store. And, you know, my grandfather knew the place like the back of his hand. And, you know, he was always fixing the sprinklers. You know, so I was going in there, turn right, go to plumbing, find some ABS couplers or something. And now I walk into Home Depot and it's 200 million square feet. And I just stand and I kind of look up and a hawk buzzes me, you know. And I'm like, I don't know what direction to
Some
start.
Some lady stuffing a chainsaw down That's her back right. with a coat over it.
I don't know where to begin. Yeah. And so programming for me was like, we're going to watch All in the Family on Thursday night. Then we're going to watch What's Happening or Good Times after that.
All in the Family.
60 Minutes. It'll be Sunday night. Like, it was just, here's what you did when it was on.
Simpler
and
times.
You know, there's no, the Emmys and the Oscars didn't slide by like ships in the night. We knew right. when yep. that shit was coming.
There were events.
And there yeah. were, there were big events. And now, it's like we're in a Home Depot that's 200 Home Depots, and I just find, you go, how does anyone find the plumbing department? But they right. they do. It's a smaller group, but they're more dedicated.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. It's a thing where critics, just like anything, who leads the industry, critics throw out a bunch of reviews. People will find those reviews, and then sometimes those shows pop. But like a Ted Lasso, you didn't hear about Ted Lasso until it blew up.
Right.
Like it That's was right. not on the radar of
And
the
I love those kind of shows.
Yeah.
I mean, those are my are favorite shows. You know, anything left to center, anything that's going to surprise me, anything that doesn't feel like they're trying to shove a bar of Dial soap down up my butt. Mm-hmm. You know, like anything that I feel like I can sort of have an authentic yeah. relationship to.
You
that
find
I,
it on
I
your
found
own.
Found it,
yeah.
you know. Those I like, you know, I really like. I did a movie, a show called The Expanse. We started on the Sci-Fi Channel, and it was so fun because it was head and shoulders above everything else on the Sci-Fi Channel. And, of course, Amazon eventually bought it. But the people who found that were the real hardcore sci-fi nerds, and they loved it, you yeah. know. And I think that to be successful now, to create niches, you know, that were – there's so much product that we can have the opportunity to bifurcate more. So it's not 90 million people tuning in to watch Saturday Night Live every Saturday
or
night.
Dukes of Hazzard.
It's now it's you're finding these different niches of different things. And that's so in a way more authentic if you're willing to, you know, not get your watch list from the Emmys.
Yeah.
Well, the thing about it is those were many of those shows I grew up watching, like the aforementioned Dukes of Hazzard or Chips or whatever everyone watched when I was a kid. They weren't good. We didn't really think they were good. It was just like if you ever go into a place, a tire place, to have your wheels rotated and you sit down in the lounge and there's that pot of coffee that's kind of burnt. And then they got the styrofoam cup and the creamer, the powder, you know.
Are there chew marks on the styrofoam cup?
There will be.
Take you a couple off the top.
You don't think that's good coffee. You're just bored as shit. You're just sitting there and it's nearby. And then there's a magazine. And it's some trade magazine that has equipment for balancing and rotating tires, you know. And you go, fuck it, I'll look at this. Like, that's how I looked at TV back in the day. It's like, this is what's in here. I'm in a waiting room.
That's a great
analogy. I can't
analogy.
Escape, and this is what. But we then thought that people really loved trade magazines for car balancing,
really well.
Tire balancing places. It's like, no, we're just kind of captive. We're just there. You know, if you, I talk about it, you think about morning radio was such a huge thing, like in the 90s and the early 2000s.
Rush Limbaugh.
And all the guys, the Kevin and Beans and the Mark and the Bryans and all the local, everyone had their local guys. And these guys were kings of the town. And then podcasting came about.
The Grease Man.
The Grease Man.
DC 101.
Smacky.
We started in DC on DC 101, and I had a paper route. And I'd have to wake up at like 4:30 in the morning before school to deliver my papers. And I would put him on. It was before the sun came up. And he used to every now and then tell these Vietnam stories.
With the machine guns.
With the machine guns and the helicopter blades that he'd do with his mouth. He was really good at it. But it was so great. He'd tell these little stories.
Gino Mandela. Was Gino, what was his name? That's a Grease Man.
Oh,
he came out
so
here
great.
Was on. He was
That's right.
syndicated on KLOS out here. But he'd just go, oh, smacky, smacky. I don't even know what he said
He's
most of that.
Before Howard Stern, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
He or was the original. We didn't know who Howard Stern was
right.
at that point.
He was the original dude.
We had all these guys, and they dominated, and they made millions of dollars, and they worked in Los Angeles, you know, Mark and Brian were KLOS for years. Big, they were bigger than many celebrities who lived in Los Angeles. Yeah. And then podcasting came about, and no one's heard of them again. And it was sort of the Dukes of Hazzard. Like, we were kind of captive. We were in our cars. We're doing our paper routes. Like, we didn't have a choice between all these boutique shows that are on the internet, whether it's TV or broadband or podcasting. It's like these guys had us.
You were in your car.
They were in your car. You're there, and there's nothing. Can you find any Gino Grease Minnelli?
Mm.
Is that his name? Is
man,
he still alive?
I just knew him as the Grease Man.
Schmucky.
He was a badass. He used to tell all kinds of stories. That's what I loved about him. You know, he played great music, and he had the shtick. But he'd go into these little 5-minute, maybe 7-minute stories that he'd tell with sound effects. And I was like, this dude is a genius.
It wasn't all Vietnam. Some of it was like robbing banks and stuff like that. But at some point, the bullets would start flying. And why that was entertaining?
Oh, because he only had seven channels to choose from. No, it's great. I guess it's why if your buddy turns you on to a show, you're going to pay a lot more attention than if some other.
And it goes back to your niche comment, like sci-fi fans, like podcasting. Sure. Podcasting is very niche. You know, like the big ones.
Yeah.
It's like Adam.
I like that murder stuff, true crime, like murder things.
There's tons of that. Yeah. So find a clip of the Grease Man. It's got to be out there. I think we've
heard it. They're long. We're scrubbing through it.
Is he alive?
As far as I know, yes.
His name is Doug?
Yeah, Doug Tracht.
Huh.
See, I never even knew that.
Yeah.
I never knew what his name was.
They brought him out here, syndicated him out here in the 90s.
That's right. He didn't last very long, right?
No, I think he was a little too old school shticky for the L.A.
L.A. always
audience.
Wants the new thing.
Right, yeah, right, he was your dad's,
Yeah. There was big rotation back in the day, too, where you'd see that. They'd grab somebody from Milwaukee or somebody. They'd put him up, and then they'd yank him down and throw some other guy up there for a while.
Yeah, I was... I did Loveline, and that was a heavily syndicated radio show, and people always thought – a lot of people thought we were in the town we were syndicated
Absolutely.
In, which is – I was flattered by that. Like, oh, you think I'm in Milwaukee doing this local show.
Were you talking about people's love lives?
Yeah. It was a big syndicated radio show. It was on K-Rock. I used to listen to it. Before I was on radio.
That's cool.
Which is, it'd be like you doing your paper route and listening to the Grease Man, and then at some point taking over for the Grease Man.
Right.
And
right. That's so cool.
You up there going, my name, Thomas Jane. Machine guns everywhere. It was kind of weird. I grew up out here, and I listened to K-Rock, and I always listened to Loveline. So taking over for a show that I'd listened to for so long.
Who was on before you?
It started with not the Grease Man, but the Poor Man.
The Poor Man.
And then the Poor Man gave way to Ricky Rackman from MTV fame.
Wow.
And then I took over for Ricky Rackman for a decade.
Yeah, right. But you guys brought it to a new level.
Yeah, it wasn't syndicated before I got there.
Oh, really?
And that's why I think when I used to listen to it, what I loved, it was authentic. You know, it wasn't the reason why.
So you were a big Loveline fan?
I was, and I was a big Adam and the Man Show fan as well, because it was always authentic and it was real. And I think
that's what people respond
to. That's why people didn't think it was Hollywood. You never.
That's what people are looking for. Yeah.
I agree.
In everything that we do, we're looking for a little bit of authenticity in this plastic, paper mache life.
Especially out here.
Oh, no.
Especially here, but everywhere.
We just want to know that they believe what they're saying. Like, I don't agree
with... You don't even have to agree with them.
I don't agree with Bill Maher on everything. I do believe he believes everything he says.
Absolutely.
And now I like him because I want to hear what he is thinking.
Yeah.
I don't know that
it seems
people
to be
are
the
thinking
one
what they're
thing
saying.
That people can't... That the people, the plastic people, the people who tend to end up running things, can never get that. That's the only way to tell them apart. They're like pod people, you know? It's like they've taken over the world, and you can't tell who's an alien and who's not, except for this one thing that humans have that they don't, and it's authenticity.
Well, I find it interesting that we can't even have conversations anymore if you disagree. It's automatically
That's
you
scary.
Fucking hate them. It's scary that we can't have differences.
I think that is a manufactured sort of consent that we're all going to agree that we can't have a conversation. And if you do have a conversation, you're going to be afraid to talk about anything really real, because we see this grand cancellation plan of people who step out of line a little bit and say the wrong thing. Unless you're, Joe Rogan, you start talking about, I took ivermectin, it seemed to work. Well, if they weren't paying him $20 million, they would have yanked him too.
Yeah, I my feeling is if people are speaking and they're saying things that are incorrect, why do you need to deplatform them?
Shut them up.
Yeah, I grew up, there'd be televangelists on the screen. I'm an atheist. I just looked at it and was sort of humored. I thought it was humorous. I didn't look at them. I never labeled them dangerous or needed them to be
deplatformed. Kooky guy.
Yeah.
Sits on his porch and says he saw a UFO last night. I talked to him for an hour. I got his story.
Well, and that's the thing. People, I want to learn about people's story. I want to hear things.
Too.
But a lot of people don't want to hear another side.
Well, speaking of kooky guys and UFOs.
I think more people want to hear the story than not. I think that the corridor of truth is artificially being constricted right now. And I do think that most people that I talk to, at least, and we get around as performers. I have the blessing of traveling from state to state and staying in funky little towns and big cities. And pretty much everybody I talk to would say exactly what we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of comfort. People know what's going on.
I think people... I don't think most people are scared of this notion of, like, first off, I think the news outlets and the big tech has some sort of bizarre relationship with information. So you say,
yeah, they're being sued right now.
Yes. I believe they're doing a lot of lying too. But you do something like, you go, Trump said you need to inject bleach or drink bleach or something, or eat fish tank cleaner. And I go, okay. And they go, that's misinformation. Now, first thing, I don't think he said that, but let's just say he did. He said, drink bleach. And then they go, he needs to be deplatformed. And then I go,
this guy
why?
He can't be telling kids to drink bleach.
And then I go, why? And they go, because he has a lot of followers and they listen to everything he says, and this is going to get people killed. And then I go, okay, how many people drink bleach? And if the answer is nobody, then I win this argument, because I think people are smarter than you think. I think when Trump says this, drink bleach, or I could go walk through New York City and grab women by the pussy, I don't think that gives you a green light to do it. And I don't even think he did it. And it was proven when he was talking to Billy Bush, because the hot chick walked up and he was like, I may just kiss her. I may not control myself. And then she walked up and he was like, hi, how are you? Nice to meet you.
How you doing? So what's your name?
He's bragging and he's saying this stuff, but they have decided that it's dangerous for me to hear this stuff because I don't know the difference between drinking bleach and not drinking bleach.
Right.
And then they become the arbiters of it. And then they set up a group that says, look, we need a truth ministry.
The Ministry of Bleach.
And we will discern what you can hear and what you can't hear.
This is
and
the I'm Ministry like, of Bleach.
That
kidding.
Never turns out. That never works.
Yeah,
that's my
problem. Just think everybody's scared of being sued too.
Oh,
like what Trump is a bad example of being sued, but I'm talking about
sued, deplatformed.
Because you can go after. There was I was told a story yesterday. I think it's in Wyoming, where somebody identified as a cat in school, right? And so they were meowing.
Oh, yeah. Furries. There's a name for these guys.
Well, problem is the parents.
One woman wears puppy mask all day long.
I don't know
that's
that
great.
Story. The story I know is this girl's in, or this person's in school meowing like a cat, and then they say, you can't do that. She says, I identify as a cat.
Yeah.
And then the parents, they kick her out of school that day. But the parents support that And that's where it gets...
Support the cat.
Right. But the school really can't take action because they're scared of what everything's going on, that they would get sued and they would actually...
There is a... You know what I mean? I know the story. Yeah. Chris, you can find the story.
Some people identify as a cat. What the hell?
And the... I think it may have been a private school even.
Yeah.
But the administration... This is the part I like, the way they word it. They go, look, she can come back... And she can be a full-time cat amongst her 11-year-old peers. But if it becomes a distraction, now we have a problem. It's like, I'd say it is a distraction. I think we're there. If I sat next to a kid who thought he was a fucking tabby, there would be a lot of distractions.
Teaches kids tolerance, love for animals.
The problem is when you have parents that support this, like I'm talking about the cat part. Like me, I don't care what you call people, but when you have a kid in there acting like a cat and the parents are supporting that, that's where the problem happens. Now, and the school can't.
The parents are probably afraid not to support it. You know, they see everybody else. You know, who's identifying as left, right, and center.
I don't think that's it. I think the parents want to make money. I think the parents are greedy and want to make money off of it.
They're driving their truck down that crack. That's the division between
exactly. They know they can take advantage.
They know they can.
We have the story, but more importantly, we have a clip from 1987 of the Grease Man.
Oh, which one do you want?
I don't know.
Let's do the story first, and then we'll go back to.
Give me the Grease Man first. I kept him waiting.
There you go.
So long.
Nino Garibaldi. Grease Manelli. All right, we got an action-packed day today.
Radio.
Oh, and he works out a lot, too.
Oh, no!
The Grease Man.
That all I can say is...
We have so many maggots. We have so many maggots. We have so many maggots. We have maggots on the line.
The setting is small and confined, but the stories are larger than life. It's a fantasy world where anything goes.
Time to wonder what it must be.
Bullets.
The strap on a gun and pin on a bag. And become a lawman.
A lawman.
There's a family having dinner, and the suspect runs right across the dinner table. Unbelievable! The family shocked, nonplussed, as you take off after him, and you run across the dinner. Excuse me.
I always know where I'm going.
Brilliant.
Wow. Schmuggy, schmuggy.
What a brilliant
dude. You remember those carts?
He had to punch those carts, man.
By the way, nobody was doing stuff like that. I mean, he was building on other stuff.
Fire those carts to a new level. Listen, one of my first jobs when I got to K-Rock in 1994 is I was a carpenter. And I was doing a character, but I really wasn't getting paid. So I ended up doing a remod of the studio. I built all the jocks, like lockers. And one of the things I built was a cart, those cartridges, they're like size of 8-track cassettes.
Oh, wow.
And I built a whole holding pin for those things that held like 75 of them.
Wow.
And they'd be labeled like bullets, women screaming. We had a cart. One of the first most famous carts we had was throwing up. Like, you know, someone go like, oh, I had this huge carbuncle on my ass. And you know.
Like all different kinds
and
of
Jimmy
throwing
would
up?
Make – no, the Just most famous one, cart okay. was one Jimmy made. The throw-up one was – he took a 5-gallon bucket, filled it halfway with water, took another empty one, and he dumped it and went like, hoo-ah! And you'd hear like, blah, blah, you know, and that was our – That was a throw-up
That was
card.
A throw-up one.
The original Foley artist.
That's,
yeah. You know what's great is the technology has changed, but the creativity of creating this stuff is still like some guy laying in bed going, how am I going to do this? I want a really meaty throw-up sound. How am I going to create that? You know?
Yeah, the heaving, that's pretty self-explanatory. It was the dumping, of all the water into the next one. All right, now we have the cat story, Chris. Sorry.
Yeah, so this is in Australia. So the girl identifies as a cat, and the private school she attends allows her to be nonverbal and act feline so long as it doesn't become a distraction to the other students.
Is
everybody upside down over there because it's Australia?
Yes. So that's the story.
Yeah,
she's she's nonverbal.
The school reportedly describes her as phenomenally bright, and a source close to her family explained, quote, no one seems to have a protocol for students identifying as animals, but the approach has been that if it doesn't disrupt the school, everyone's being supportive.
I have a protocol. Knock it the fuck off. Now open that textbook, bitch.
If I was in school, I'd be like, no pets in school. Sorry.
No pets.
Sorry. No pets in
school. No pets allowed. Big sign.
I'm allergic to cats. We got an issue. I need my EpiPen. I think I could pull that off.
You would have a point.
I'm allergic.
Sorry, I can't be around you. I'm allergic to cats.
I want to hear about the alien stuff. I know.
Why?
Because you're writing a book on it, right?
I am.
And
I'm writing a book about aliens.
I think we should set the table what the alien stuff is.
Yeah.
I'm older than you guys. I grew up in a world where all we talked about was aliens.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. We were very much – first off, we had the Bermuda Triangle. Devil's Triangle.
Berlitz, the guy who wrote the books, the Bermuda Triangle. It was huge in 79, I think it was.
He wrote the language books?
No, the Bermuda Triangle about, you know, the books.
But you said Berlitz.
I think that was his name.
Berlitz, the Berlitz books.
No, not that guy. I'm mixing up the names.
So we had the Devil's Triangle, the Bermuda Triangle. That was sort of possibly controlled by aliens. Then there was a lot of pyramid talk.
I think it was a time warp.
Who built these pyramids? How did they get here? You know,
still a lot of pyramid talk.
A lot of Leonard Nimoy.
In
Search of.
He was great.
He's talking about, and there was a movie called Chariots of the Gods. It was like a whole Sun Classic
Von
International.
Daniken.
Yes. Yeah.
No,
we're deep. Now we have actual cockpit footage of possible UFOs, and no one gives a fuck.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting that we went from obsessed with this thing that we didn't really have any evidence of to real conversations in front of Congress about, hey, man, I think there's something out there. And everyone's like, yeah, okay, let's get back to arguing over January 6th. You know, that's what we've become. We're such narcissists now that we can't even – really go, maybe there's something outside of us that is going on. It's all about us.
Last month, they had another congressional hearing, the first in 50 years, the first since.
Right.
They basically said, listen, they implicitly implied that essentially the DOD wasn't doing enough and that they have this thing called the UAP Task Force. They said, we're going to change the name and we're going to exclude any reports from craft that are basically man-made. So implicitly implying that that what they were studying was non-man-made craft.
Man-made?
From a human-made.
Yeah. Right.
Human-made. They're saying they're in the congressional report, which you can read, they're saying we're separating. There's the man-made unknowns, and then they call them unknown unknowns that are not – they say that are not man-made. Those are the ones we want to focus on, implicitly implying that we're looking at some non-human craft here.
And what they're
– that was last month.
They're basically saying these crafts are doing things that we couldn't replicate, and if China – was doing it, we'd know it. And if Russia was doing it,
which is a silly argument, because what the crafts are doing are essentially breaking the laws of physics as we understand them. So when some congressman or somebody gets Marco Rubio goes, yeah, well, you know, there might be some breakthrough technology in China or Russia, you're like, oh, you mean the ones that break the laws of physics? Einsteinian physics are somehow suspended in China and Russia. Got it.
Right.
Let's look into that.
I think we'd be aware of it. We'd have satellite imagery of them taking off or dropping it or doing whatever it was.
Well,
so
yeah, I mean, somebody hopefully would have written a paper about it. But you know, there's a lot that goes on behind closed doors, and that's a problem that academics have with the whole situation. They have a lot of problems with dealing with non-human craft.
So what's everyone's take on it? Like, it used to be if the American public found out about it, there would be chaos.
Yeah, they were losing.
And so the government would
Breakdown of human society, that was the Brookings Report, came out. You know, it's just a think tank where they got a really bunch of smart people in a room. And they said, all right, you know, what if these are aliens and we admit that. They basically said that we're worried that human society as we know it might break down. So they're all right, maybe we'll.
How long ago was
maybe
this
we'll
report?
Put the kibosh on
how long
that.
Ago was this
report? The Brookings know. Report yeah. came out in
80s, 70s?
No. We're talking, Jesus. It might have been the 60s, but it may have been even earlier. It may have been as far back as 54. And I'm thinking that it was something like that in the mid 50s, the Brookings report, because of 1947 was when they really started. I mean, people were seeing them everywhere and they were big news. And actually, the 40s and 50s, they were huge news. And the Air Force had to get involved and start Project Blue Book.
Mm-hmm.
And Blue Book essentially became a public relations firm because so many people were taking UFOs seriously. They had to basically say, okay, we're going to investigate this stuff.
And then back in the day, all they had was like grainy black and white photos with stories. Like the farmer said he saw a light in the field, and then the military showed up with a flatbed truck, and they carried something out with a tarp over it, but they said it was a weather balloon.
A lot of stories, a lot of that. A lot of consistency to the stories. And then you had, like you have today, airline pilots, policemen, firemen, like military men making these reports. So you're either like, okay, everybody's completely lost their mind or something's going on, which is why they had to start the program, which lasted until 68 when they brought in Condon, who was a guy who they hired to essentially create a team of guys to go investigate the Blue Book reports and say, okay, scientifically, is there anything to this? And everybody thought, well, this is great. I mean, all the UFO researchers, all the people who were interested in the subject were like, "This finally, somebody's taking this seriously." This was in the late 1960s. They diddled around for about 2.5 years. And what we didn't know, what we found out later in the 70s, is that the Brookings report was essentially a con job where the Air Force said, listen, we got to get out of this UFO business. So they hired a bunch of scientific professionals to essentially say there is nothing here. And this is exactly what they said. There is science will not be furthered by the study of UFOs. There's nothing to it. So then Project Blue Book from the Air Force was able to say, OK, we're done with this and let's move on with our lives. Then it became that you were a kook if you were in the 70s, 80s, and all the way up till recently. You were basically a kook if you saw them, because the science boys, the boys in the jackets, they say they don't exist.
They don't exist.
That lasted for a while. They did a good job for decades, which is why, you know, when I grew up in the 70s and the 80s, you know, they had a show called Project Blue Book. Which, of course, I was there. You know, there's only 7 channels, so I was there every Tuesday night to watch Project Blue Book. And they do one case, and the boys would get up and they'd wear their uniforms, they'd go knock on the doors, and people would, and they'd redo the reenactments. And at the end of the show, every single time, the Air Force would be like, "Ah, it was a weather balloon. We thought it sounded really interesting."
But now
that was just a midget who was on it. We got lost from the circus, and there was a circus in town 50 miles away. It must have been him.
It is it's pretty verifiable, a lot of this stuff now. And
now anyone who's reasonably intelligent can do a homework, and it would take you about an afternoon to figure out that there's a real phenomenon going on.
And you're going to chronicle this in a
that's
book?
That's been done a lot of times. There's some wonderful books. UFOs in the National Security State by Richard Dolan is one of my favorites. He's written 2. He's working on the 3rd. Those are chronicles of essentially all the major cases that have happened since 1947, 75 years. It's a lot. These books are thick, but they're also really well written. And, you know, you get halfway through one of those books and you're like, wow.
I think as an outsider looking in on UFOs, I think the biggest thing people, when they hear UFOs, they think of little green people in these flying saucers. Little green men, where UFOs is just an object that's unidentifiable.
Based on a case in Kentucky, Hopkinsville, where this family of farmers was literally besieged by little green men. They had big ears, long fingers. They were about that tall, and they were shooting them with shotguns. I mean, these are Kentucky, you know, farmers. I mean, they weren't fucking around. And they would shoot them with a shotgun. They'd come up and look through their screen porch, you know, and one of them come up and bam, blow them away. And they would like be like pink, like bowling balls. They just go bing. And then just kind of run away like you couldn't hurt these things.
I guess,
and that's where we get
I guess
the
my
green
thing
men.
Is, if you think that, it makes it unbelievable, like little green people are coming here. But if
look,
you just
it's a disinformation
program. If you just stick to the, oh, these crafts are unidentifiable, mm-hmm. then I can believe that. Oh, yeah, right. There's some stuff out there we don't know what
that's
it is.
That's a good point.
But when you put it on these little green guys,
yeah. That's right.
That's when you don't believe
that's right.
It.
That's
well,
right. That's a good point.
I want to keep going here because I think Thomas thinks they may be here, these folks.
You know, you're absolutely right. The problem is that – and it was a problem for UFO researchers for years. You know, they were willing to deal with unidentified flying objects. But then when you started asking, well, if they're intelligently controlled, who's controlling them? That opened up a whole can of worms that it took years for people to slowly start wrapping their mind around – Who's actually controlling these mm-hmm. things?
All right, let me hit a quick sponsor here and then a break, Chris. Is that correct? All right. Let me hit concrete. Your body makes about half the creatine it needs. The other half comes from your diet, but most American diets are low in creatine. So you got to get concrete. The stuff's good. It's got a nice lemony flavor. I take it every day. Dr. Drew swears by it. It's a patented creatine HEL favorite of elite athletes and also well-informed athletes. The number one bioavailable creatine and the only microdosing creatine. Just one small scoop per 100 pounds of your body weight. Just put in some water, shake it up. It's got a nice lemony flavor, like I said, and you get the energy immediately. You can feel it. Creatine is required for functional energy in every cell. Your brain uses about half the creatine, and or I should say about 20% of the creatine in your body. Then your immune cells need it to protect you, and your heart cells need it to pump. Lung cells need it to breathe. It's concrete, right, Dawson?
Take control of your health, both body and mind. Build a better you with concrete. Register now at con-crete.com/podcast. Then con-crete.com/podcast for a chance to win a $500 Walmart Visa gift card available now online and in-store at Walmart. Concrete is truly life-changing and performance-enhancing.
All right, quick break. Right back with Michael and Thomas right after this. Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Well, I just want to tell you about a quick podcast study here. As you know by now, we all do our very best to align the right sponsors to the podcast. It's a lot of work behind the scenes, and I'm incredibly grateful for your support. We're currently running a quick survey at podcaststudy.com, and we're giving the first 150 people a $10 digital Amazon gift card as an incentive to complete the survey. The information we hear from you about our sponsors is incredibly important to the show, and we can't thank you enough for taking a few minutes to help us out. I mean, come on, it's free. Now cut us a break. Upon completion of the survey, you'll be asked to include your email address, and we will send the first 150 people a $10 gift card from Amazon. Go to podcaststudy.com, and thank you again for helping our show and our sponsors.
Saddle up and get ready for Westerns Weeks on Pluto TV, all for free. We're coming in blazing with favorites like True Grit and Once Upon a Time in Mexico. Or immerse yourself in binge-worthy series like Yellowstone and Walker, Texas Ranger. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies, TV shows, and more. The best part? It's free. No credit card, no sign-up, no fees. Download the Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
People of Earth, it's time for another installment of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month, we got things that will take care of your body, soul, and scrotum. Like a sample pack of Tame the Beast Nut Butter, a blend with Tuck Everlasting anti-aging and anti-chafing ingredients that will keep your sack high and tight. We've also got the great Dano's Seasoning, who will make each and every kind of meat taste even better, whether it's beef, pork, or your fellow man. Dano's is low sodium and no sugar, so even Vinny will approve. We've also got Nude Mints to not only freshen your breath, but your gut biome too. These incredible products and a bottle of your choice can be found at CorollaDrinks.com for only $25. So prep your mailbox. A new month of Adam's Monthly Nut has arrived. The Adam Carolla Show presents Thomas Jane's Birthday Cocktail Party for February 22nd. Let's see who's invited. The Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army, the first President of the United States, George Washington. From Grandma's Boy, Mildred Davis. U.S. Senator, Ted Kennedy. Major League Baseball manager, Sparky Anderson is here. O.J. Simpson's former best friend, Robert Kardashian. F1 racer, Niki Lauda. The doctors in the house, Dr. J, Julius Erving. Crikey! Steve Irwin's here. From the PGA, let's welcome Vijay Singh. Rachel Dratch just joined the party. Drew Barrymore is here. And the greatest television announcer of all time, Don Pardo. Thomas Jane is on the Adam Carolla Show.
And Michael Yeo is sitting in as well. Dig is the name of the movie. It will be in theaters and on VOD coming up September 23rd. And we're talking about aliens. So,
Miss George Washington. He's that's when I grew up. It was
that was first.
Oh
yeah, it was.
I was looking at my phone.
Sorry. Yeah, he was commander of the Continental Army. So, do you believe there are aliens that are here right now?
That's a damn good question. It's a darn good question, and I think it's worth looking at. And I think that one of the big questions is, why are we not able to take this seriously?
Aliens.
Humans. Why are humans not able to take aliens or the possibility of visiting aliens seriously? Why are we have so much trouble wrapping our mind around it? Because you said earlier.
Well, I think why is because the way they're visualized, like how it's stuck in people's brains, people.
But we know. I mean, you know, we don't know. We've been around long enough to know that the cereal box version is probably different than the real version. We have trouble even dealing with the real version. Or even contemplating what that might be. And like you said earlier, you know, we've got January 6th, we've got ever distraction after distraction in our human created world. We have enough to keep us busy for long time.
Does it make sense that if another species came here, or maybe it's us from a different time or something, and we went off somewhere.
Us from the future, a group of us that were taken off planet thousands of years ago, raised on another civilization, and now are, as part of that civilization, coming back to visit. I mean, all those possibilities are on the table because we just don't know.
And would they, you know, it's always funny. We're always like, society would come undone if we knew about this. We always think of America. We never really factor in Germany or the Netherlands or Japan. Like, I don't know how. Yeah, maybe they would, Africa. Maybe they would react differently. I don't know.
I think but one third of the world doesn't have a working toilet.
Yeah,
really? You know, I know. And we're like, we don't get electric lawnmowers in the next 10 minutes. We're going to ruin the environment. Like, yeah, those people are shitting in the woods, people, and burning dung. So
that's
would we assume that if people were living here, they would have to look like us, and then they would either have to start off like us, or they would have to be able to make themselves into us.
And most evolutionary biologists say that if you were to rewind the tape of evolution on planet Earth, you wouldn't end up with creatures like us, that there's so many variables. A meteor hits the planet 65 million years ago, wiping out the dinosaurs, letting the smaller mammals take over, which then grew into monkeys, which then evolved into us. So why would people who report seeing alien beings, these beings are not, they don't look like octopuses with six eyes. They've got two arms, two legs, they've got feet, hands, two eyes, they've got a mouth, a head. What the hell's going on? Well, why would that happen on another planet?
So you're surmising that it's us from a different time.
No, I don't. I think that there's a lot of different, first of all, there's been a lot of different variables of reports. You got to look at the reports, going back 75 years, there's been a hell of a lot of encounters that human beings have had with these dudes who get out of their spaceships, and they're all humanoid. Some of them actually do look indistinguishable from us. Some of them,
let me spit this out because I'm just thinking of this all for the first time. Are you kind of saying that if you wanted to rule some planet, you'd have to kind of come out like us? Like a dolphin or an octopus can't really do it.
Right. Dolphins can't make fire.
You need opposable thumbs and dexterity. And if you want to build buildings and spacecraft and start fires and stuff, you would end up sort of taking our shape.
So there's something in biology that doesn't get a lot of attention. It's getting more attention now. It's called convergent evolution. Convergent evolution is when you take two different parts of the world, like America and Australia, and you get a porcupine on both continents. And for generations, it was assumed that somehow porcupines ended up in both places, but they're still the same porcupine. Turns out they're not. That somehow some creatures evolve the same set of evolutionary skills to survive as other ones, even though they're on different islands or different continents. In other words, evolution creates the same solutions over and over again.
Yes, like it wasn't a porcupine drifted on a piece of wood
and somehow
7,000 miles away.
A pregnant porcupine.
So, like what you're kind of saying is take a look at all of the military fighter planes from this era or before. They take the same shape. They take the
same
shape.
We have a limited amount of solutions to solve the problems of living in a physical universe and getting our needs met.
Their wings are swept the same way. They have the cockpit in the front or whatever. Right. You're just saying
if
you wanted to create something to do this task, it would no matter – even if the designers and the engineers never spoke to one another, they would all start to arrive.
That's correct.
When you go to the soapbox derby – they all kind of look like the same thing because there's just some universal laws.
And then to take that further, there's all universal laws in creating a society. There's based on the primitive sort of primordial needs of creatures who need to feed themselves, who need protection, who generally compete for resources. So these are hurdles that we're going through now. We're tearing the world apart for the oil in the ground in order to fuel our civilization, and that creates competition, right? There's always been competition for the next apple tree, because it's got the apples that you want, or it's the oil in the ground, and it's over there, and we're going to create a little band of dudes and go over there and get it so we can bring it back here. Those kind of forces would also exist in the universe.
I guess my question as an alien hater, like a guy that doesn't really believe – I believe in UFOs but not the aliens is they're so far ahead of us in advancement. Why would they even care about Like they could just come over and take over.
That's right.
If they're so far ahead. So why are they trying to blend in? Why are they trying to live here? That's, just come here and take over.
Right.
You know, that's right. I guess that's my question as a person that doesn't. Now, do I believe there's people like us in the galaxy? Of course. That would be ignorant not to say there's other life. But to come here and just scope us out and become us.
Right.
What's the use of that?
When they have
the technology to take over.
They have that. And they would also have the technology to be completely invisible to us. So why do we see them at all if they can blink in and out of existence, that they have sort of invisible? I mean, we now have infrared invisibility. Yeah. This is in the 40s. This was kind of tough to wrap our minds around. Now we can actually imagine how you might be able to use the technology to create a craft that can blink out of existence. You don't see it anymore. So if they've got that capability, why do we see them at all? We see them a little bit. We see them just enough to wonder about them, and yet they haven't taken over the planet. And why? So they're here. So it's a conundrum. It's not a paradox. Yeah. It's a conundrum, and that's what I write the book about.
Okay.
And do you foresee a future where they will be seen and a bigger part of our society?
I see the end of civilization as we know it if we continue down the path that we are continuing down now.
What is that path?
Of rapacious growth or die economics,
mm-hmm.
of competing territories, of the overuse of fossil fuels, the overuse of digging heavy metals out of the ground to create electric batteries. That's not sustainable.
Right.
I mean, they've been
what's that got to do with aliens?
No, right. I was going to say, how the fuck are we going to get to work?
Yeah, right.
I mean, we can't have electric cars. So we can't have internal combustion cars.
We are the way we are right now. Changing it too fast is going to, as we're seeing, is totally disastrous.
Yeah, what people don't really realize is energy is power. People fight wars over energy. World War II was started because we told Japan we weren't going to give them any oil. We're going to blockade
it. Economies.
Yeah, it powers everything. So when we cut off our own energy, then guys like Russia go, we got energy and we'll sell it to you.
At double the price.
Right. And you become dependent on people you don't want to become dependent on.
Right.
But
these are intractable problems that aren't going away unless we start to solve them.
But are they – there's a part of me – you guys tell me where you're at. You know, I always used to look at all the doomsday sort of, here comes the plagues, end of days people. And there were religious people, and I would make fun of those people because they used to have like this group, this church group – or this cult group is going on top of Mount Pinos Friday night because they figured out the rapture is happening over the weekend. And they're just going to sit there with Cheetos and folding chairs. And then I would always make fun of them because I had to slink back down the mountain on Monday and go to work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Fun while it lasted.
And then I realized, every generation has somebody who says it's happening on our watch. You know? And I realized, well, that's just a human sort of bizarre narcissism where you go, you know, you had guys 1,000 years ago saying the earth was going to end while I'm here, like during this little heartbeat while I'm on the planet, it's going to end.
The last generation.
And then it just kind of kept going. I always make fun of those people as sort of religious nut jobs. Now what's going on, which is interesting, is they're no longer religious nut jobs. They're environmental nut jobs, which has sort of taken place of the religion, and they go, this is happening while I'm here.
Have you seen these people drilling holes in dairy trucks in Germany so the farmers can't deliver the milk?
No.
I mean, it's in the Dutch, they've been protesting for weeks over the fertilizer
yeah.
that they suddenly yanked.
Yes.
There's some major trouble.
There is shit.
The Green Party has been blowing up pipelines in Germany.
But here's the question. So then I sit around and I go, Jesus Christ, there's chaos everywhere. And then, you know, Russia's invaded Ukraine and Ukraine has nukes. I'm sorry, Russia has nukes. And what are we going to do with them? And Iran's developing the nuke and all that. And then there's a part of me that goes, maybe this is going to end on my watch. And then I go, don't say that, Corolla. That's what the you made fun of those people.
Now you're becoming one.
Crazy religious nut jobs. Now you're one of them. And I'm like, no, but look around. I don't know. Do we have another 100 years of this or 500 years of this? I feel like we have like between 9 and 13 years of this, in which case I think I'll be around. And now I'm the religious narcissist nut job that I made fun of, but I'm
we're all becoming the nut jobs, you know, and it's not a bad thing. It's time to start looking around and asking these kind of questions, you know. We really I believe that we also have to be very suspicious of the solutions that the controllers are shoving down our throats. We have to be suspicious of a lot of things these days. We really have to learn to be discerning and to try to look at the problem in reality, what's happening. And then I think right now is just sort of spreading awareness, you know, because these are bigger, you know, there's a lot of really smart people out there. We've done amazing stuff. If we focus on a problem and we attack it honestly, we can usually solve it. Right now, we're trying to get people to just pay attention to what's really happening. And you're right. Part of the resistance is, you know, this overarching feeling that the world's been around, where our version of the world has been around for a few hundred years. It'll probably be around for a few hundred years more. These assumptions are started. We should challenge them.
I'm a total optimist, but
optimism is good.
Yeah, but I believe that since there's so much negativity on the news, and what you hear is what you start to believe.
Right.
I think there's going to be a correction where people are just going to be fed up with it and go, look, we're getting back to our normal lives. Screw what you say. You see the ratings on news platforms going down, and people are turning to people they trust more of podcasting and different outlets.
When you go for your Saturday barbecue and it's $150 for a couple of steaks, then you're going to have to start looking around and going, do I really want to live in this world?
Well, let me say this. I'm not as optimistic as you, but I'm not pessimistic. I believe not that a lot of people will wake up. I just believe we will have two groups. And Dr. Drew would always say to me, because he's always used me, he says, his North Star, his beacon of light and hope. He would always go, what's going on? Where are we going? Where are we going? Because I would always predict things and then we would get there, you know. And I'd say, we're not going to one place. We're going two places. We're going octagons and safe spaces. We're going Jeeps and Priuses. Mm-hmm. We're going morbidly obese and ultra fit.
Right.
We're just branching off. Yeah. We're not going to go, hey, everyone, go this way.
Right.
We have crazy obesity amongst kids living with guys that are doing Tough Mudders and all these crazy diet. You know, you have people that are living off of Taco Bell and people that are living their most healthy life ever.
People are dealing with it in two different ways, but what they're dealing with, what they're reacting to is real, you know, and it's forcing people to sort of be pushed further and further into one of those two directions. Fentanyl is now the number one cause of death for everybody in America under the age of 65. And that speaks to exactly what you're saying. It's either I'm going to start meditating and start looking, you know, and treating myself right and loving my family, or I want to start doing drugs.
Yeah, we're going to meditate or we're going to medicate.
Yeah.
And you're exactly right. But that
wedge is just going to get further and further apart, and that can't hold.
When I was growing up, all you saw on the street were just sedans. You know what I mean? Some Corollas and Priuses and, you know, Sentras and stuff, and a Ford Taurus. Now I just see Teslas and guys driving Ram trucks with lift kits and Tough Mudder, mudder tires on there, and like flags hanging from the back, like just rumbling. I've never seen more monster trucks on the road, and that's in LA.
So this
is a time where you either are driving a Prius or you're driving a monster truck, because everyone's like making a statement. They're going into a camp.
Yeah, you know,
we're kind of forcing people to go, you got to declare a major. And they go, I want a Camry. And they go, no, and that's not good enough anymore.
President of the United States just called half the country terrorists or something. What did he call them? You know, extremists or something? What, now there's no left and right anymore?
There,
I mean, a healthy left and right is what the whole point of this place is.
But
so
I
that's
guess,
dangerous.
No, it is dangerous. But going back to your point, if everybody's in two corners, how does that what does that look like?
I think there's a version of it that works. I mean, it's not what you want.
No, because one side always is going to, because the nature of human nature, one side's going to try to grab power and control the other half. So that's what you're looking at. Everybody's choosing a side right now, and then the fun really begins.
Yeah, and I think, I'm trying to think of what the hell did Biden call everyone? Sort of.
Semi-fascist.
Yes, they sort of.
That's like, with
fascism.
His V for Vendetta backdrop. I mean, Jesus, man. Look at what's going on.
Well, look, my whole thing is this. I know the Democrats are always calling the right fascist. Ron DeSantis runs Florida, and when COVID came around, he went, if you want to wear a mask, don't wear it or don't. I want to open schools.
Yeah, the
Gavin
New York
Newsom
Times
shut everything down and forced everyone to wear masks and cleared
Florida
you off the beaches.
Then
he called Ron DeSantis a fascist. And I'm saying, call him something else, but you're the one who's shutting everything down. That's what fascists do. And he's the one going, if you want to wear masks, then wear a mask. So now we're getting to this place, and the place is everyone's dividing. And my thing is there's a version of this that works if you go, well, I live in California. My kids are in the 11th grade. They're going to graduate in a year and a half. I don't really like the regulation in California. I don't like all the taxes. I don't want to live under an emergency order from the governor in perpetuity. So I think Texas might be cool, or Nevada or Florida might be cool.
Right.
And then I will go there, and then people will sort of end up sort of
Creating two countries,
essentially. Right. Now, that'll work fine. Like, I'll go, fine, I'll move to Texas. I'll get some acreage. I'll build myself a barn. I won't have to wait 6 years for the permitting process and all that kind of stuff. At a certain point, L.A. will completely go off a cliff and California will turn into a 100% shit zone. Right. Now, where the problem starts is when they go, hey, you, we need some of your ranch land because we have too many homeless people over here. Because eventually the people who bottom it out are going to have to go to whoever's keeping the lights on and go, we need some of your land to put some of the homeless. And I was like, hey, our deal was your shit roommate.
Your shit. And then you got two constitutions.
I'm going to go over here, and at some point you come to me and you go, can I have some cereal, dude, because I'm hungry. And I'm like, I told you to get a fucking job, but you said I was the problem. And that's probably where this is going to go.
It's a great book by, his last name is Schlichter. He's written like three or four of these books where they, literally is that the country has split into red and blue, and they've put a big border wall around it, and to get one into the other. And of course, it's, you know, the guys in Texas are living rational lives, and
see,
life
you
is
say you
apart.
Say Texas, but Texas, like Austin, Texas, is Democratic.
That's what I'm saying.
Now is that they can live? New. You can live together.
Oh, I agree. No,
you can live together. It's just you have to have the same ideals and the.
Well, like, here's the thing. Sorry for cutting you off.
No, please.
I think I'm not an expert, but I do street savvy. I just got back from Austin.
Yeah.
And it's great. But they're new. They're sort of new. You know what I mean? Whereas LA, San Francisco, Portland. Yeah. I said, look, go ahead and keep Austin weird, but fucking stop at a certain point. Don't just keep going. Because I grew up out here. I love San Francisco. Yeah. LA was great. Portland's great. Seattle's great. Plenty of funky, kind of progressive, left-leaning, democratic towns you could go to, let your freak flag fly, and have a good time.
Don't vote the way you voted in your state in my state. That's what they say.
Well, the Texas people thought that. But so the thing about Austin is Austin would be like Portland in 1999.
They're just, you talked about it last, they're just left. They're not extreme left.
Or Seattle in 2004. Yeah. Or San Francisco 20 years ago. And what I said to the people in Austin, good for you, but you got to stop.
Right.
At a certain point, homeless people are going to start declaring their own towns, and you guys are going to forget the difference between men and women, and you're going to start teaching this at schools, and you're going to, it's going to be a shit show. You're going to defund the police. Like, I've seen the future. Just stop here. Here just means you got a cool bong store on the corner and there's a drum collective on Sundays next to the farmer's market. That's the fun part of this. It's when it doesn't stop.
But what I grew up in Texas. So what I love about the state is that will never happen to me because it's too many Republicans there too. Yeah. You know, hopefully you got a good balance.
Checks and balances. It's checks and balances.
Well, it's too many normal people. There's Republican or Democrat.
Here in LA, it's a different world. Like I told you, I moved to Nevada. It's a different world over here. It's a 50-50 state, and it's beautiful.
Oh, it's California.
You're not just talking hearing the same thing all the time. You're hearing different views, and that's the problem with living here, New York, and different places. You're hearing one opinion.
The echo chamber.
And that's all it is.
Right.
In Nevada, I could be out there just talking to people and hear tons of different opinions. That opens my eyes.
That's ideal.
That's what you want.
That's what you
want. And Texas is that place. That's why I love Texas as well.
Yeah. I love Texas too. They've been talking about seceding for like 100 years.
Yeah, they've been.
They might get serious about it.
Well, I feel like if the earners and the taxpayers are moving at some point, whoever needs their money is going to go try to find them. I mean, Gavin Newsom, the most damning thing you could say about a state you were running, which is, listen, all you people and businesses that are thinking about moving, I'm thinking about have you pay taxes for the next 10 years, even after you move. It's like, aren't you saying that you've created a horrible environment for people to work and start a business in if that's your plan?
You can't escape if you try. Isn't that what they do in like totalitarian countries?
Well, that's what Ron DeSantis wants.
You can't leave.
You know, the crazy thing about L.A., I have friends that own little businesses. Some of them went out of business here and some lasted. But just to be able during the pandemic to go to a Walmart where 3,000 people are in there and my friend can't have their gym open that holds 10. Oh. You know, it's just like it's ridiculous. So my friends are going out of business.
Right.
But the big businesses are staying in business.
And that's happening more than ever. I mean, one of the biggest detriments that's happening right now is the eradication of the middle class, which started in COVID. But the fact that we're not trying to build up the middle class is what separates us from the rest of history and the rest of the world. The middle class is an American invention that is what made the country great. It's actually started in Europe because the rich people thought, you know, these guys are coming up with some really cool shit. That's all the great inventions. It was entrepreneurship. That was the beginning, and then America took that and really made something great out of it. You eradicate that. Now you don't have the guys who have the time to sit around and dream up these incredible things that change our world. Now you're either delivering boxes for Amazon or you're running Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, in terms of division, I mean, that's what California is just turning into, ultra rich and super. Everybody else, like living on the streets and stuff. And it.
Right.
Yeah,
I agree. Bifurcation has, that's sort of the downside of the bifurcation that you're talking about. And it becomes, that is a problem that's not going away. You know?
Here's what's interesting. In LA, I did okay. In Las Vegas, I'm rich.
Well, you weren't doing gay porn for you.
Well, that's true.
That might add something.
That's where my career shot up.
Yeah. Just and tips. You're not declaring the tip. No, I see it all the time. I have employees. I understand it. I know what I pay them. I drive through this city. I grew up out here. You know, I grew up in a house that cost $10,000 in 1953. My grandparents' house lived up the street in North Hollywood. Their house was $12,000. My dad's first house after they got divorced was $12,000. Like, it was a piece of shit, but it was $12,000 in like deep North Hollywood. This is in the 70s. I mean, a real piece of shit, but still a $12,000 house.
The house.
And I drive around and I'll see I was driving. I was in Woodland Hills, went to the Home Depot, was driving through, trying to get back on the freeway and driving like through Woodland Hills. Had a purse in my car and just looking at a broken down Valley Ranch house. I go, that thing's $1.3 million bucks if you want to live there. And it's like, you wouldn't want to live there, but that's between 975 and 1.3. And it's like, people have jobs that pay $54,000 a year. Wow. What? Where does the 1.3?
That was the great American dream when you knew that your kids were going to grow up to do better than you did.
Yeah, my dad. So if you break it down, my dad had a job that paid $24,000 a year. And the first decent house he got when he remarried was maybe $100,000, you know. So it was basically 25% of the price of the house is sort of what he made over the course of the year. Now you got a bunch of people making $54,000 a year looking at $1.3 million. How does that math work?
Right. Well, in LA, I've never seen, you know, I used to live in Hollywood, and I would see 35, 40 year old friends living with each other, like roommates. Like, what kind of state do you have where 35 and 40 year olds or roommates? You know, that's how much it costs to live out here. And I was like, if you're not in the industry, what are you doing here?
I don't know.
Most people live with their parents. In Japan, if they're single and under the age of 40, they're living with their folks, most of them. You know, it's a different world.
No, I agree 100%. Yeah. Like, if you don't have business here,
get out.
Yeah.
I was like, why are you even here? Like, why, even if you work at a fast food restaurant, why are you here? Go work at that restaurant in Vegas or somewhere else where you actually can make a living off that money.
Right.
I don't understand it.
I don't get it either. I will tell you that as a former, very poor, very downtrodden person, you know, we always talk about poor people and we go, they need to be educated and they need to be motivated and they need to be whatever. It's more of a mindset than it is anything. Like, people, it's not that you don't have the education to make money. You think you don't deserve to have money. That's for other people. You just get it's a downtrodden.
You get back to the education and the system and the way most folks have been born into that kind of situation. But you also look at the fact that, in a world where everything is for sale that goes to the highest bidder, you're looking at huge apartment complexes. Toronto is the most – you go there, it has the most cranes. They're building the most buildings of anywhere in North America, and about 40% of them are empty. They've been bought by people from other countries.
Or China.
Saudi Arabia. But that's going on in every major city in America. So it's not that, you know, there's not enough houses. It's that – people are paying huge amounts of money and leaving them empty.
To answer your question is when you're poor and you're kind of downtrodden, you just kind of suck it up. Yeah. Like, you go, why wouldn't you move and go get a job at a Chipotle and then have enough to live in a cool environment where gas is half the price and rent is half the price and all that? And the answer is because I suck. This sucks. This is it.
Like, get used to a certain routine. It's one of the most stressful things is, like, one of the five most stressful things is moving. And if you're going to move to a different state, people do it. People do it all the time. But it does take a shift in consciousness to go, hey,
well, besides that,
I don't even think people ask the question, why am I here?
But it also takes money to move. So, you know, these people that work at a Chipotle,
yes,
they got to save for a while when they're living check to check to move. But my thing is, after living here and not being here anymore, I never want to come back besides this show. But to wrap my head around, why would anybody live here if you're not in the industry and trying to make it in that industry?
Thomas, where are you at?
I'm in Silver Lake.
Silver Lake.
And I bought a little farmhouse in France.
Oh, really?
Southwestern France, yeah.
How often do you get out there?
As often as I can, you know.
Quite a departure from Silver Lake.
Well, I had to, you know. I'm from the East Coast. I'm from Maryland. You know, I grew up in a different world. I've never really, really fell in love with this place. I was here because of the industry. So I always wanted to. And I figured, you know, it's a planet. I mean, why? I've spent half my life in essentially one spot on the planet. Why not, branch out a little bit, see what this thing is all about? And I think that is really a gift if you can get yourself to do it. It's a real gift.
I agree. I've been out here in Glendale for a million years, and now I got a place in La Cañada, so I'm expanding.
Any expansion
my footprint
is a good
on the
thing.
Planet.
Adam will be here less than 2 more years. He's out of here. You're out of here.
People go, when are you leaving? I go, I will show up at my children's high school graduation in a U-Haul. And I'm not even getting out. I'll honk the horn when I see the hats go in the air, and then we're heading to Texas.
There you go. Yeah,
all right. Let me hit electric e-bikes. Love these guys. If you've been looking at electric bikes, you may have gotten a little sticker shock. Electric e-bikes cost way less than the bikes, and it doesn't skimp on any of the features. It folds in half quickly. You can throw it in the back of the SUV. You don't need a truck. Ships fully assembled, and this thing works. My son goes to the races with me. You know, his great joy is buzzing around the infield while daddy's out going super slow on the track, and we bring the electric e-bike every time. Almost any terrain, including gravel, snow, and more, cover up to 45 miles on a single charge, up to 28 miles per hour, and he says a little quicker when he's on the downhill section, with a 500-watt motor, removable battery, LCD display, 5 levels of pedal assist. This thing is inexpensive and works and is filled with features. Right, Dawson?
Hop on and ride with electric e-bikes during their fall sale. Go to electricebikes.com and save up to $150 on a 2.0 e-bike purchase. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
All right, a very fun and interesting conversation with the great Thomas Jane and Michael Yo. Dig, name of the Thomas Jane movie. That's going to be coming out September 23rd.
Good little movie.
23rd.
Check it out. Dig.
VOD and in theaters as well. And shoot him a tweet at Thomas Jane. Michael Yo, I never thought, very funny stand-up special, which I saw in its entirety. And it's provocative and it's funny and it's heartwarming as well. It's available on YouTube. Live dates coming up, Denver Comedy Works. That'll be coming up this Friday. And then you can see more dates by going to michaelyo.com. Is that covered? Me, San Diego, coming up October 28th, 29th, Mic Drop Comedy, and then Helium Comedy Club, and then Rialto Theater in Tucson. You just go to adamcarolla.com for all my live shows. Until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Michael Jane. Thomas Jane and Michael Yo. Say it.
Like Michael Jane.
Mahalo.
Make sure you pick up your copy of Adam's new book, Everything Reminds Me of Something. It's available wherever you buy finer audiobooks. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. And get your tickets to see the Ace Man. Get them now at adamcarolla.com.
You own, you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Saddle up and get ready for Westerns Weeks on Pluto TV, all for free. We're coming in blazing with favorites like True Grit and Once Upon a Time in Mexico. Or immerse yourself in binge-worthy series like Yellowstone and Walker, Texas Ranger. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies, TV shows, and more. The best part? It's free. No credit card, no sign-up, no fees. Download the Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now.